Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on a throne of my consciousness. With great bliss and anticipation that come this morning and to share with you. In India, it's called a time of Sat Sang. Sat is truth and the eternal being, and Sang is association, coming together. So we all come together to focus on the greatest truths that have been revealed to mankind down through the history of all histories that we think of history as what's recorded history. But Sri Yukteswar tells a story that's quite interesting. According to Hindu cosmology, we have gone through many, many cycles of the advancement of civilization and then coming back into times when it seems to retrograde into a situation where civilization is not so advanced. And it helps us to understand what we see and are witness to, that many thousands of years ago, Sanskrit language was even more developed than it is today. And today it's one of the most advanced communications in the world, that we see physical evidence such as the pyramids. We see there is evidence of towns that have been laid out in tremendous order and advancement. And so we see that there are many things from our past history that indicate that man's evolution was perhaps even more advanced than it is today, but at least with the pyramids, it equals anything that we could do today, and maybe surpasses in some ways, that these giant stones, some of them weighing 70 tons, have no mortar in them, and you couldn't even pass a credit card between these stones. That's how finely chiseled that they are, and that from over 13 acres of these stones, there's less than an inch variance between one end and the other end in terms of height, that they're perfectly level, and that's after they've sat in the sand for thousands of years. So it's really quite something when you think about it. What kind of minds, what kind of architects were there that could create a notion? And we don't even know today in wide circulation what the purpose of these tremendous buildings were. Elizabeth Hite gives us some indication in her book Initiation, where she remembers a previous lifetime. And there she said that these tremendous structures, the Great Pyramid in particular, was a place of initiation, that it focused these tremendous energies. Perhaps some of them are physical in terms of gravity and different electromagnetic lines that go around the earth. Some of them may be more subtle than that, and they help to release the consciousness from the human into the divine, and they help to speed evolution in that way for those souls that were prepared for such an experience. Not an ordinary person could enter in and have that kind of influence, but that souls who had been in intensive training could get that, and in that way they got a tremendous advancement in their own evolution. But it didn't guarantee the evolution, as Elizabeth Icke in her previous lifetime proved, because she, you might say, fell off the wagon. And as a result of that, she had a karmic debt to pay, and she said that she was embodied in a mountain for many thousands of years in a period of darkness as a result of the choices that she made. And so we see that mankind has been on this evolutionary journey. And the fact that there is not a lot of physical evidence need not disturb us. The Earth, number one, the Earth has gone through tremendous changes over those hundreds and thousands of years. And there have been cases where entire continents have disappeared. And others have been ground up by the advancement of the different continents as they've moved around. And also, it can be that in these more advanced yugas, these more advanced ages, the physical creation is not such a necessity. We are quite proud of all of our technology. But that technology may be substandard when it comes to the faculties and abilities that those beings in a higher age would normally have. That intuition would be developed at a much higher rate than it is today. And so communication by telephone and by television would not be a necessity. That would be something that could be done inwardly. And so on. You could travel through means other than getting into a car or an airplane, great distances. And so we see, for instance, in the life, an example of Babaji and Lari Mahasya, as described in the autobiography of a yogi, them traveling in a light vehicle, you might say, that would take them physically from one place to another, perhaps as at the speed of a thought. Now, some may think that that is pure fanciful thinking, something of science fiction, but look what today is taken as commonplace that just a few years ago would have filled science fiction books only. So these are some things to ponder and think about. And what does that have relevance to us today? It means that we are on an evolutionary cycle and that man's intelligence is quickening. But it's a material kind of intelligence by and large. And as a result of that, we are getting more and more power. But we're not necessarily keeping up with the wisdom. True, there are many advancements, and nations, by and large, are getting along better now than they have ever before in our recorded history. So those are good things. But that the entirety of the Earth has caught up with that evolutionary cycle is not the case. And so you see individuals who can do tremendous damage if they choose to with the right weapons in their hands. So we must be intent upon our own spiritual path, because no individual is wholly disconnected from any other or from the entirety of the whole. So that as you make your spiritual evolution, so does the Earth. You help to lift all mankind up. If you want to think about it in a physical way, if we are all connected like links on a chain, and you start to rise up, you begin to pull all those links that are most directly connected to you up. And if they cooperate and they begin to come up as well, then the entirety of the whole link of humanity begins to rise up and exhibit more and more profound spiritual attributes. So this is an extremely important work that you do, not just for yourself, but for humanity as a whole. And you say, well, we are just a small group. How can we influence this world? And yet you look at the lives of some of the great masters. You look at Jesus' life with his disciples, just a dozen of them. And they change the world. This tremendous life of this great spiritual master that we know as Jesus or Jeshua or Joshua came into the world. And as a result of that, a great transformation. And some people may point out and say, but look at what wars and other kinds of things have been launched in his name. And this is true. But it is not of his doing. They are not of his teachings. He taught a message of love and of redemption and of upliftment. And it is through these principles that mankind is transformed. It is to Jesus' great humility, knowing as he surely did, that his powerful teachings would be taken and misused by lesser minds and lesser souls, is undoubted. But that he submitted himself for the betterment of mankind, even though he knew that his name and his teachings could be used for hatred and other kinds of misdeeds that have gone on in this world. True and total, complete humility. Surrender to God. Now, there are some who say, well, if God is all-powerful, why doesn't he just, with a wave of his hand, just change it? But he has given individual souls their freedom. And that is irrevocable. And so each one of us has the freedom to turn toward the light or turn away from the light, to do good or not to do good. In a spiritual sense, there is no such thing as small deeds. Everything that you do, every choice that you make, if you choose to tell a lie, if you choose to steal, even if it's small amounts or what we call little white lie, it is something that is a mark that is put upon your mind and your consciousness. And then it's something that you have to deal with if it becomes a trend. And you begin to tell these little lies because, well, it's just convenient. Or you want to avoid something embarrassing or so on. It's not that you have to go around pronouncing to everybody every misdeed you've ever done. That's not it. But when you deliberately mislead and tell a mistruth, it's something that registers deep upon your consciousness. And in contrast, when you take courage in your hand and you speak the truth, even when it's uncomfortable, you don't steal. You do everything according to your own highest light that you know. Then you strengthen your character. It's like exercising your muscles. And as a result of the exercise, your muscles grow stronger. The blood flow increases and you build the muscle to strengthen the body. And your character is exactly the same way. And so as you do in the microcosm, so it goes out through the macrocosm. It's been somewhat humorous to me at times when I've heard people argue very strongly around what has happened to this planet and people who have polluted it and so forth. And it is something to be concerned about. But you look at their own behaviors and they're smoking and they're using drugs and they're ingesting things into their system that are far more toxic than anything that's being done to the earth. So it's pure hypocrisy, you see. You have to first change yourself. And as Master said, change yourself and you will change thousands. Not because you go out and announce it, but because it is something that is a principle that gets enacted. So that's a longer preamble than I meant to say, but God had something to say, didn't he? I'd like to read from others the truth behind the parables. You know, you can go to school, you can attend Bible class, you can attend lectures, you can go to many teachers, but what you are here for is to realize within yourself the things of spirit because God dwells within you. It is His infinite presence within your very life, your light, your intelligence, the power which makes you move and live and breathe and have your being. And it is He alone on whom I would like you to concentrate. I am only His child and His servant. I have given my life to Him completely. I picked up my cross, which is to say, my body, and I followed Him even unto the death of this cross, which is my body, so that I might be able to experience the truth, and as a result, if it was His will, to teach this truth to all those who are seeking the truth, and many are today. It's wonderful to see the tremendous uprisings on every level in the religious field today. Nobody has a monopoly on God, you know, and nobody has a monopoly on truth, because God is everywhere equally present in every religion, in every individual that walks this earth. It is He, it is He, it is He. With all of you who are coming for the first time, I want you to know that this is not my name, my fame, my glory that I want enhanced and spread around and across the earth. It is only that of the Lord, and every single thing that I teach you is to focus your attention upon Him. Because as Jesus said, and as all of the great scriptures say, seek ye first God and His kingdom, and then all else will be added unto you. All for the information on every level of consciousness. If you want information on any level, occult, clairvoyant, psychic, it makes no difference what, seek God first. Because if you seek these other planes first, there is a danger in doing that. But if you go to God first, putting your full attention upon Him, then if it is His will and you have a need for this information, it is given to you in some form or other, and you are fully protected. This is the main thing. I've had many strange experiences since I held my last meeting in the middle of June, and some of them were rather terrific. And I had psychic experiences, and I had experiences with entities, exercising spirits from people and things of this nature, and having to deal with them afterwards. And do you think that I could have done these things by myself? I can assure you I could not, in any sense of the word. Healings have been accomplished, but God has done all of these things. I have not done them, because I have no power whatsoever as an individual human being. It is God who uses this vehicle, which He Himself created, to do anything that He wishes to do to it. Because it is my will to do only the will of my Father. And when each and every one of you can forget yourselves, the little self, that self which is interested in worldly things and all the things of the senses, of keeping yourself comfortable all the time and making sure that you aren't hurt in any sense of the word, and making sure that you come first. When you can give up that little self and fix your attention fully upon God and say with all of your heart, your mind, your soul, your strength, here am I, Lord, take me, then you have really arrived at the beginning. And you haven't given up yourself. You haven't given up anything except that which is a burden to you. But what you've gained as a result of doing that is so far beyond my power to tell you that it is indescribable. What you're seeking, what you see, is not somebody outside of yourself when you say, I want to become one with God. You are seeking your very self. That which is God within you. And that is what people don't recognize. They have been taught from the very beginning, think of God, perhaps as being with a long beard and a very long flowing gray hair and sitting upon a throne or something of this nature. Some see Him as pure spirit, but this is most difficult for people to see in the beginning. They don't understand what God as spirit means. But He is that eternal light, that eternal intelligence, that eternal power that is in every atom of space, in everything in this universe, everything. I want you to universalize your mind so that you know that this God presence, this Christ presence, is within you. But don't forget that that Jesus the Christ was the Son of God, and he came to take us to the Father, not to himself, but through the consciousness which was within him. It doesn't matter if you're a Muslim, a Jew, a Protestant, a Catholic, a Hindu, whatever. The same principle holds true, and this is what we have to realize. That's God's Word. It isn't the Word itself that is contained in the Scripture. It's a description of the manifestation of the Word, because the Word is pure spirit. It's that vibratory force which goes out from God and, in accordance with the rate of vibration, builds itself into a form. And that form moves and lives and breathes and has its being because that eternal spirit is within that form. It is the life within that form. Now, these teachings are tremendous by Mother because it highlights in each and every one of us that God dwells within. This is the most astounding news. The gospel means the good news, the good message, and it is startling. It is astounding. Even 2,000 years later, mankind has failed by and large to comprehend the depth of these teachings. It is really something to say that the eternal God, that infinite light, intelligence, and power exists right within you. Now, most of us, many of us, would look at our lives and our own experience, and we would think, no way. It doesn't exist inside of me. I know myself. And we think of the errors that we have made and all the mistakes that we have made in life, and we think that cannot be all-powerful. And the reason for this is that this power of God, this Word of God, exists in you in latent form. It has the potential to be everything that Jesus or Krishna or any of the great masters were. However, in most people, it resides latent. And this is well, because there is a transformation of consciousness that allows us to properly engage with that higher intelligence and life and power. If we are given all of that power, all of that intelligence, all of that light at once without preparation, it would burn us to a crisp. In the Old Testament, there are encounters that are made with God. And inevitably, God would say, do not fear. Now, why would God say that? It's because the individual is sitting there trembling in awe of the tremendous light and power and intelligence that they are having an encounter with. It stretches them to the greatest degree that they can be stretched. It is said that in the time of Moses, that he radiated such a tremendous light from his visage that he wore a veil over himself because others were awed by seeing him in his natural state because he had seen and been a part of this tremendous power of God. It's a wonderful thing, really, to be told that you have this infinite power within you. And yet, how are we to approach it? How are we to experience it if we have such a drive? You know, a real drive is needed in order to realize God. I'm not too interested in trying to convince people and talk people into coming onto this path, because this path, as Mother described, is intended for those who are on the last mile. And in order to have that experience, you must be dedicated, heart, mind, and soul. Every part of you must be bent toward that purpose. There have been many wonderful souls that were with Mother. And when the going got tough, they weren't able to make it the whole way. They turned away from the mountain as they were climbing the steepest paths. And what that indicates to us is that there are many dedicated, wonderful, sincere souls who don't make it the whole way. Now, we don't need to have a negative doubt about ourselves when it comes to that, only that we need to steel ourselves with the purpose in order to go the whole way. It's not an easy path. And Mother says that you must be willing to surrender everything that you are, everything that you think yourself to be. Then that really goes to the core of ourselves. Because deep inside, we remain attached to those things. I've told you before about an experience that I had when I was walking up a hill, and God suddenly, like with a syringe, just sucked all the life energy out of this body. And I was up in spirit, and I could feel the all-powerful nature of God in spirit, but in the body, I felt like a weak little wet rag. And I knew that of myself, I am nothing. I had no power to continue up that hill. I had no power to take even another step. And I surrendered it all to God. Not that I had a great deal of choice in the matter, because it was something that just happened. But I surrendered it all to God, because there's a part of me, of course, that didn't like that. That didn't like being left in the middle of the hill with nothing. And he's proven again and again that my intelligence, that everything that I have are completely at his whim. And he can withdraw any of it at any time. And if he takes it, I don't have it, not a bit of it. Now, as I surrendered myself to God, as I was walking up that hill, suddenly I had the power to take just one step at a time. But it was clear and obvious to me that at any moment, God could take that away. Now, this strikes at the core of who we think ourselves to be in a human ego sense. The ego sense is that part that surrounds this body, that thinks of itself as this body. And when you let go of everything, your intelligence, your willpower, everything that you have, and you surrender it to God, and then God takes it and he uses it exactly as he wills. There's many things that I would like to do today that God does not allow possible. And I have to give it to him. I have to know that what he is doing is for the highest good. And sometimes I'm in the middle of the day, I have plans for the day, and he takes everything that I am, and he transfers it into a higher set of consciousness. Now, he's made me a householder. So there are things to do in the household. And yet, I'm not able to do any of them at times because he takes me, but he lifts me up. And in that uplifted state, different ones come to mind, and I feel God pouring forth his light, his power, his intelligence out to those individuals. It's not anything I can do. I don't do it. I don't have the wherewithal to do it. But God does it through me, and I feel his thoughts, his power, his light flowing through me. And it goes out to different ones. And then later on, I hear that this one was having difficulty or going through a transition. We just lost a lovely soul who had been a Kriyaban. And at the time when she was leaving the body, I was in that kind of uplifted state. And I felt myself flowing out. And so God uses this form in the ways that he chooses. And I can tell you, I still have some conversations with God. I have to remind him at times that he's made me a householder. So he has to allow me to be able to do a few things in order to keep the household in the right condition. That there are times when I need to be able to move from one room to another. And sometimes I have to remind him that this is a small human vehicle. And sometimes it trembles and it shakes at all that he passes through this form. Once Ramakrishna was asked, why was it that his physical body went through such tremendous things when he was feeling the effects of God? And he says, well, it's like a little hut that has an elephant inside of it. And that elephant begins to move a little bit this direction, a little bit that direction. You can imagine what happens to that little hut and that huge elephant starts to move. The hut begins to shake and tremble and move from side to side. And it's an apt description of what it's like, what God does when he takes up your form and he uses it. Now, some may hear that and they may be afraid. Can I do that? What would happen to me? How would I earn a living? What if he takes everything from me? What if he takes the things that I feel are mine? Well, those are exactly the same questions that every disciple has to answer. And answer at a point of surrender. There is no guarantees. There's nothing that tells you that life is just going to go on in a particular way. But you know what? There are no guarantees anyway. You can be living one moment, and the next moment, God can take you out of your form. Lights out. Game's over. In terms of living in this body and on this earth. What happens to all those things that you guarded so carefully? They're all left behind. Not one of them can you take with you. And at that moment, what is it that remains important to you? What did you do with this lifetime? Is the question. Did you fulfill what you came to do? And all the excuse making and all the attachments and all the reasons, they pale into insignificance if you have not measured up to what you had hoped to accomplish when you came to this earth. There is no one to judge you. There is no one who will be on the outside shaking a finger at you or throwing you into a hot Hades. Rather, the voice of incrimination that comes, if there is one, is your own point of consciousness that knew the truth when you came into this life. And if you would want to know that truth, just simply as a mental exercise, place yourself at the end of life. And then see what is of importance to you. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't have a life to live on this material plane. Of course we do. Most of us must earn a living. We must be able to handle ourselves in this world. And God allows us to do exactly what is needed. Exactly what is needed. When Carla first came to these teachings, And she offered to be of service in any way that she could. And at the time, I couldn't handle my checkbook. My mind just didn't go in that direction. I remember again reading about Ramakrishna and Master Mahasya, who wrote the Gospel of Ramakrishna. He was describing some mathematics to Ramakrishna. And at some point, Ramakrishna said, "Stop, my head hurts. It's so painful." And I know exactly what he means, because when you're in an uplifted, spiritualized state, your mind doesn't bend in certain directions. Some directions it does, and it's fine. In other directions, it seems whimsical at times, but you just simply can't do it. And if you try to force yourself to do it, it creates such tremendous pressure, you feel like your head's going to explode. And so I asked Carla if she would help with doing the books and doing my checkbook. It's simple arithmetic. It should be something that a third grader could do, but I couldn't do it. And so she took it over. And then much later on, when God expressed his will that we should get married, and then as soon as we did, she started into the spiritual experiences, and we went to Mexico and then to India. And she is full-blown into them. And she couldn't be left alone for even a minute. She needed to be watched the entire time, which Swami Satchidananda had put her into an air-conditioned unit, the only one that I know that's at the ashram, because of the tremendous heat that she was having. So that made volunteering to watch after Carla even more pleasurable for lots of the Westerners who were there, because they got to stay in the air-conditioned unit. But there she was, and she had surrendered herself. She had done what we are discussing here today. And God took her at her word. And so from the very get-go then, she was taken into these experiences. And they are not easy, but she is here as living proof that you can go through these. And you can continue through them, and you're all right. You're all right. Mother was a great living example of that. Now, for so many thousands of years, individuals went to ashrams, and they were in seclusion, and they were under the direct guidance of a guru in order to go through such experiences. But you know, even in India, much of this has been lost. I was amazed when I've traveled the length and breadth and width of India and finding so few swamis and so few yogis who had actually experienced the awakening of the kundalini. And going through those experiences, they had heard about them, they had read about them, but they themselves had not gone through them. And this is a tremendous legacy that we have from Master and from Mother. The power, the spiritual power that they brought to awaken these divine experiences is really something unique and wonderful. And if we put ourselves in total accord with their teachings, then we are brought to that point. Now, everybody's experiences are different. So some can remain in the world, but not of the world. For many, many years, I worked, and I went into higher education and all the rest of it while going through these experiences. And I didn't always handle it in full balance, because God was so tremendous in the ways that He took me up. But I did the best that I could, and somehow I managed to be in this world, but not of it. And so my own life is a demonstration, even as Lara Mahasya, of one who could work in this world and still go through these different kinds of experiences. And you know that Lara Mahasya was known even within work. He was known as being unusual because he is going through these experiences. They knew that he was not an ordinary soul. It's a very endearing story, where he was sitting in a bank there to make a deposit. And anybody who's been in India and sat in the banks, it can be an hour, several hour long display where you go from one window to another and you're given a small coin with a number on it and you wait for your name to be called. And he was in such a queue. And while he was there, he was perhaps thinking of God and meditating just for a little bit. And suddenly he was taken all the way up. And he wasn't aware of his circumstances or the world around him. In the meantime, the bank had come to its closing hours. But the manager of the bank knew that Lara Mahasya was a wonderful and unusual soul, a high soul. And so he told the bank workers who are around, this is a very rare and great privilege for them to be there with this master who is obviously in an uplifted state. And they all sat around after the hours of the bank was to be closed. They had locked up the bank. But they all sat around and sat with the master until his consciousness returned to a more normal state. And suddenly he looked out through his eyes and he saw all these bank employees who had stayed afterwards, who were waiting for him to come down into a normal state. Now, this may happen no other place than India, but there it happened. And he was very embarrassed because he had made these good people to wait after the time when they would normally go home and get their meals. But there they sat. And he smiled and they smiled and they completed his transaction and off he went home. And it's through stories such as these that we know that Lara Mahasya, even though he operated in the body, sometimes there were times when he was not in an ordinary state. One time, he had gone down to the Ganges. I'd walked down through those back alley streets that went from his house to the river. And at that time, he'd walked down there and I believe it was a brick had fallen off of a building and he cut his leg. And he had just gotten done taking his morning bath in the Ganges. But he's in an uplifted state, and so he tied a rag around his leg and continued on his way. And when he got home, his wife looked down at his leg and looked down at the rag, and she started laughing. And she said, "What have you done?" And he looked down at his own leg, and he had tied the rag on the wrong leg. And the one that was cut was still bleeding all over the place. And he hadn't realized it because he was in this deeply uplifted state, this blissful state. As Mother says, this state cannot be told. It cannot be explained until you have experience in it. The purity, the light, the upliftment that you experience in this state of God union is so tremendous. I wish with all my heart that I could transfer it to each one of you so that you would know and that you would have that experience and you would value it more than anything else in this world. It is one of the greatest mysteries how avidya, the individual ignorance that we have, that the veil of avidya can drop and we can have a tremendous experience in God. And then that veil rises up and it's as if we never had it. And the value isn't there. And why does that happen? It's because the mind gets active. This ego mind that creates this field of separation. And as a result of that field of separation, you don't even believe in that light, even though you've had tremendous experiences in it. You don't value it. Now, in my own dark night of the soul, when I went through 2 years, before that, I had been experiencing God on almost a continuous basis, very few breaks. And then suddenly, this shadow, this veil dropped across me, and it was nowhere to be seen. Nowhere to be seen. Now, thankfully, I had Mother's teachings on the dark night of the soul. And I knew it was something that I had to go through. I didn't know how long, but I knew that I had to go through it. And as I did, there is no semblance of any God experience. There is no upliftment. There is no purity. There is no light. There is only darkness. There is only shadow. There is only the limitations of the little human ego self. And I had to live with that for such a long time. And I knew that God would take me through that if I stayed true to Him. And so I never lost sight of Him during all of that time. But as I was being released from that experience, I had a vision. And I was walking through a desert, but it was a beautiful desert. It was a spring desert that was in bloom. And the ground, the brown ground that I was walking in, almost had a spongy smell, and the smell of, or feel, and the smell of the air was that spring-like smell, and it was just infused with the presence of God. And I just soaked it in like a sponge because I had been missing it for so, so long. And I turned around in that vision, and what I saw was the ground was charred black. The air was filled with a thick black smoke. The ground had been broken with earthquake. And when I saw what I had been walking through and what I had been enduring, I let out a loud yell because it felt to be so much when I saw it visually like that. And then I turned around and I saw my own soul walking down the path. And that soul was filled with the light and the splendor and the beauty. And I knew that I was beginning to come out. But it was another 6 months of coming in and out of it until finally I came into that, again, continuous experience of feeling God. And I can tell you, having the contrast, the direct contrast, between God experience and the absence of God, it hones and chisels into your mind the preciousness of what it is to feel God's presence, you never again take it for granted. And you know that when he demonstrates on a daily basis that he can take or give as he wills, that it can all be gone in a second. Now, there's no fear with that. It's just simply a recognition that it is all according to divine will, and that you know that it all works for a higher good. But that dark night of the soul emblazons upon the mind to a degree that you do not take it for granted. You do not take it for granted. We all play too fast and loose with this because we can go into periods of upliftment. Perhaps it happens during a talk that I'm giving. And then afterwards, that bliss, that peace, that spirit can be cast aside, and suddenly it's all about talking and impressing others and gathering information, and the mind goes outward, and there's no semblance left of the divine perfume that just minutes before had been exuding throughout your soul. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't have time together and enjoy that time together. What it does mean is that we have to guard this presence of God carefully, to guard it with our whole heart, mind, strength, power, and soul, to never take it for granted, to make it the most precious thing in our life. And if we're faced with a choice between God's presence and something of this world, that we choose God first, always, first, last, always put God first. Because this is the most tremendous treasure that we can have in this world. All of the great religions, all of the true teachers and spiritual masters have avowed to this truth and are pointing us in that direction. But who has the ears to hear? Who has the mind that has been prepared for those seeds so that they may go deep and be lasting and find roots that will hold it through the storms and trials of earth and this life on earth, and who has branches that reach toward the light? Both are needed. Both are needed. I've been feeling Babaji's presence so greatly. And it may sound strange to some that when God's presence is there so greatly, why would any other masters be there but mothers and masters and Swamijis and so many of the great masters come in spirit and through thought transference, and it's wonderful. Because a true spiritual master is one with God, but has their own particular flavor, has their own particular vibration. And it only adds to the greatness of what God is, you see, because at that point, you don't separate it out and say, oh, this is Master, this is Babaji, this is Mother. Babaji was the last presence of our spiritual gurus that I came to know in a real and substantive kind of way. And it was while I was at Cloud Mountain. And when I first felt him so greatly, I asked him to manifest physically. And you know what he said? A very sharp no. And it shocked me. And he indicated that I gained far more through my attunement with him in spirit, and that it was the material mind that was looking for confirmation through a material manifestation, and that wasn't appropriate for me at that time. He wanted me to go beyond the form, you see, and into pure spirit. And this was a necessary lesson for me to have. It was something that I've been hanging on to. I remember when I was up at Hornby Island one time and I was taking a walk through the woods at nighttime. in Halliwell Park. And I was guided through the woods. I was under a very strong influence, and I felt Babaji's presence so strongly. I looked up at the stars that were so brilliant, and I had this feeling that Babaji could descend like any one of those, from any one of those stars and materialize himself. You see, so I had an attachment to him in his physical form, but he didn't want that for me. He wanted me to go beyond that. And so I did. And so I did. But once being beyond it, and having no attachment to the form, you see, then you're safe. As Mother said, seek ye God first. Don't seek these other lower experiences, noble as they may be. Don't fix your mind on them first, leaving God aside. Because if you do, troubles ensue. And there have been those who have gone after psychic experiences. They've raised up so far, gone through parts of the mystical crucifixion. But instead of going the whole way, they turned away from what was required at the end. And they got involved in psychic world and psychic experiences that were really a rough time and almost destroyed them. And if it had not been for Mother's grace, they would have been destroyed. So it's not something to play around with. These things happen. And we best take heed of the teachings. We are given only the highest teachings, the most pure teachings. If you ever think that you tire of hearing too much of the same thing, it's because you're not really taking it all the way in. You're not really enacting it in your life. Otherwise, it has a living, vital power that is there to help transform you. And it will take you all the way to God. So there is no such thing, you see, as getting too much of a good thing in this case. It is perfect, it is right, it is exactly what God has designed for you. So don't just stay on the surface of the mind. The human ego just wants to keep things at a certain level. And so we level off in our spiritual search and in our advancement. That is ego consciousness. And it is not a good thing. There is no such thing as neutrality in your spiritual journey. You're either going up or you're going down. And if you're not making spiritual effort, if you're not really applying yourself and putting it the shoulder to the wheel, then you are going backwards. You're not utilizing this life as it was meant to be. Take what is given freely, but apply it. And in doing so, you will transform your life. You will know the truth that I am teaching, that Mother taught, that Master taught, that Babaji taught, all down through this Guru lineage and from every great spiritual master who has ever realized God. Just like to read to you from the back page quote from the Cross and Lotus Journal, from myself in this case. To follow your spiritual path is not negation to following your dreams. In fact, self-realization is the ultimate dream in that it fulfills the promise of all you yearn for. All desires and ambitions are but aspects of your ultimate desire for God. Put God first in your life, and you will realize your heart's desires. And this is absolutely true. These are things that God gives through me. But when they come through, I feel the truth of them, when it is exactly in accordance to His will. So let us leave no stone unturned. Let us surrender ourselves, heart, mind, and soul, and give ourselves to this ultimate purpose in life, and let God command you as He wills. and you, ironically, will achieve maximum freedom when you surrender yourself completely. I'd like to sing a song at the end here. It's according to God's prompting. May the long time sun shine upon you. If you'll join with me. May the long time sun shine on you. All love surround you. And the pure light within you guide you all the way home. May the long time sun shine on you. All love surround you, and the pure light within you guide you all the way home. May the long time sun shine on you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide you all the way home. May the long time sun shine on you. All love surround you. And the pure light within you guide you all the way. This is my heartfelt prayer for you, and that you will fully embody the message within it.